Good morning, everybody. It is January 14th, 2020, and I hereby call to order the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. And if you would like, please join us as we recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Next, I would entertain a motion to adopt today's agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Seddon?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Agenda is adopted. Now we will have public comment number one, and as you can see from the agenda, this comment period is for the public to address any topics on today's agenda. Does anybody from the public want to address us? If so, please move to the microphone. Seeing nobody move to the microphone, I'll close public comment number one. And now we have consideration of a proclamation declaring January as Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Month. And George Galitzos is with us. He presented this, and he's going to read part of it, and then I'll finish reading it. So thank you, George. Good morning.
And good morning to the Board of Supervisors and all of our allies who are here today that are here for the proclamation and will stand with us in the fight against human trafficking in Story County. I want to begin by reading the proclamation that you have are about to adopt, and thank you, Board of Supervisors, for joining us and standing with us in this global fight against trafficking. There are more enslaved people through labor and sex trafficking in the world today than in sheer numbers than at any time in world history. So let me proceed with reading the proclamation. Whereas the United States was founded upon the principle that all people are created with the inalienable right to freedom, and added the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, making slavery illegal. Whereas slavery within the United States today is most often found in the form of forced labor and sex trafficking, which weakens our social fabric, increases violence and organized crime, and debases our humanity. Whereas this heinous crime is found within our own community. Whereas the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking has been working for 10 years to abolish all forms of human trafficking through education, volunteerism, advocacy, and collaboration. Whereas every business, community organization, faith community, family, and individual can make a difference by choosing products that are not made by forced labor, by working to protect our young people from sexual exploitation, by addressing the problem of internet sex trafficking and pornography, and by becoming more aware of the problem and possible solutions.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim the week of January 12th through 18th, 2020, as Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Week, and encourage all our citizens to become more informed on this growing problem, to be vigilant and report suspicious activity, and to work towards solutions to end trafficking in all its forms in our community. If you see something that doesn't look right, take action and call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. I would entertain a motion to adopt the resolution.
I move that we adopt the proclamation for Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Week.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion? Seddon?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
We've adopted the resolution. Thank you very much for bringing it, and thank you everybody who came for this. We'll take a picture now if everybody would like to come in front of the
thank
desk
you.
Here.
Okay.
thank you, everybody who attended. Now, we'll go on to agency reports. We have none. Consideration of minutes from our January 2nd organizational meeting and our January 7th meeting. Can you combine those in a motion, or do you want separate motions, Shelley? Together's fine. I'd entertain a motion, or is there something?
Yeah. I'll make the motion to approve both sets of minutes with one Scribner correction before the final ones are issued. That would be on January 7th. Down under the name change for Squaw Creek, and in the one, two, three, it looks like the third sentence, after the semicolon, all lists, and I'd add an S, all lists contain. That's it.
Okay, that's motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Olson?
Motion.
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are, with a minor correction, are approved. Consideration of personnel actions. I'd entertain a motion.
So moved as presented.
I would second.
Okay.
Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Personnel actions are approved. On to consent agenda. Are there any items that we need to pull?
Not for me.
Not for me either.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we approve them all as presented. It was a long list.
Yeah, we can draw that. I will second that motion.
Okay. Any discussion? Then vote on the motion. Olson?
Aye.
Sutton?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. I'm trying to figure out where we are now. We're under public hearings.
Yes.
Okay, and we have Joey Brogdon and Jeff Harris here to talk about the bid opening, or to open the bids for the Justice Center Jail Housing HVAC project.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, I'm going to do the opening. Jeff's going to...
record numbers, and I did leave a bid tab or a bid summary up there for you.
We do.
You want to write them down?
Got them.
First one is from Bergstrom Construction. In the amount of $424,424,000.00.
Still list the duration, or I think that was the one other. Is it on the back page? There you go.
Yeah, looks like they list 21 weeks for completion.
Joey, just to make sure, we did require any bidders to attend the pre-bid conference,
yeah,
correct?
I think
okay.
We did, and Bergstrom was there, I know.
Bergstrom was there, yeah.
Okay.
We'll confirm, you know, in the next week when before we come back
right.
to make a recommendation, we will. Plan is to confirm that they, all the bidders meet all requirements.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Got to get all my little boxes checked off.
It's on the list.
For sure. All right, the next one is from Harold Pike Construction from Ames, Iowa. They have a bid bond. Thank you. 1 and Addendum 2 in the amount of $460,460.00 with a duration of 20 weeks. And they were at mandatory pre-hearing.
Again?
Proctor.
Proctor.
Mechanical.
Thank you.
Addendum 1 and Addendum 2, bid price of $538,400, 538,400.00, duration of 16 weeks for completion.
And did they attend the pre-bid?
Yes, I'm yes. Sorry. Okay. Yes, no, they, okay. Yes, they were at the pre-bid. Mandatory pre-bid. Okay. That is preview received.
Yeah, it's a wide range, which we all maybe we'll dig into that and find out what the... But
apparent low bidder. Yeah, would be very sure. We'll review it and confirm they meet all requirements and then come back probably a week from today and make
a
recommendation.
Okay. Thank you. We have this listed as a public hearing. Did I open the public hearing? No. Okay. And I think we listed it in there, but this was on our agenda, so I'll open the public hearing. Are there any comments? And if not, I will close the public hearing. So we followed our agenda. Okay. And we'll see you next week. Okay.
Thank you.
Now we have additional items. Todd Lundvall, discussion and consideration of a hearing conservation program for Storey County.
Yes.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Hi.
So we've got our second safety program here that we're looking to roll out about hearing and conservation. I'm hoping you all had a chance to review and look at it, and I'm just here to see if you have any questions or what I can do for you.
I know I've marked a couple of questions. Okay. So, and I feel this in the back because this might be a partial or list of questions too, but under responsibilities, so that's on page 1, okay, and we talk about the location manager shall ensure, and the first bullet point is the site program leader is identified, and then it goes down to talk about the duties of the site program leader. My question is, depending upon which particular department or office it is, could we end up in a situation where the site program leader is under a union contract and does that change anything? And then, in general, would that change a job description for somebody? Move it? No? I see Alyssa shaking her head back and forth, meaning no. That was one of my thoughts, is just
sure.
If, have we assigned a lot of extra duties to somebody?
It won't change.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
I'm scrolling down.
Yeah, I'm scrolling down too.
Okay. It goes down. Now I'm on audiometric testing services, which are also hearing tests, correct? Okay. All right. So that's on page 8, it looks like. And it says that it shall be performed by, and it says McFarland Clinic. And I was just wondering if we actually need to do requests for proposals. Okay, Alyssa once again is shaking her head no, Todd. How did we pick McFarland?
They're the provider that we've used and continue to use, and they meet the requirements for the hearing conservation to be able to do the testing as far as being licensed and qualified for mm-hmm. that information. So.
Yep. We've been using McFarland. Do all our physical, they do all of our hearing tests. They have an occupational health department, which is our designated physician for our work history. So it's all consistent with using the same provider. We do purchase ear molds, different things, different parts.
Okay, so when was the last time that we did a request for proposal for all those services?
We have never done it for my year. I don't know.
When I first came on the board, I had asked about it related to our insurance, all of our insurances. And instead of doing a new RFP, what we did is we asked Nat Tedesco to put together exactly kind of a comparison. They went out saying as a broker, okay, these are the other options available, ICAP versus others or whatever. And we then decided, of course, to stay. We didn't do an RFP so much as an analysis of what else was out in the marketplace there. I understand what you're saying. There's probably not a lot of entities that do that. I'm thinking, though, that does, in fact, Story County Medical, in its a contract with Unity Point, have the comparable services?
They may have it. They won't have all the history for the last 20 years. We've prepared for hearing screening for all our employees to make sure that they change every single. I believe in that aspect. The other thing that we do use is if there is something that shows up, we do refer them to the ENT at the time. I don't know if Unity Point has them. The only thing they've ever reached out to is they started a new occupational health clinic in the Medea site. And we would use them as backup in that.
I'm thinking more about it since it's public dollars that, from a fairness entity standpoint. Then I've heard no complaints about McFarland. It's just if we've gone 20 years without ever seeing what else is out there or giving other people an opportunity.
And I get that. I think that's pretty across the board. The insurance providers that we use. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we're going to hear more RFPs
I think you've kind of alluded to there's advantages of having all of those services with one provider. My concern, and I don't know, of thinking of Unity Point is it sounds like with McFarland, if we need something more, the referral is within McFarland or within Story County. If we were using, say, Story County Medical, since you brought it up, I don't think they probably have all the services within Story County. I think people end up having to go to Polk County, have to go to Des Moines or West Des Moines, which is a real disadvantage, I think, in terms of getting the services. I'm not myself feeling a need to put it out for an RFP.
I'm not, and when I asked about an RFP, I don't know that we need to either, but I'm interested in determining if there are like providers, okay, that could provide at the same level, the same route that we took in 2017 with, and I guess it was actually maybe early 2018 that actually Steve Goodhue from Map to Desco brought us to the board. I'm saying that as this county grows, that every so often I think we're obligated to look at who we're using for our tax dollars, and have we inadvertently locked out other providers. And I'm not advocating for Unity Point or Story Medical. That's probably the most comparable I'm thinking right off the bat. But and then the board can make that determination just on a comparison and coming back to it. Maybe we say, hey, this is all for all the reasons that Alyssa listed, that's still where we prefer to go. But I'm concerned that sometimes we're locking out new businesses, new providers.
Do you have it seems to me that we wouldn't know those things unless we put out an RFP.
Right. Yeah, that would be my question is, I wouldn't get that unless you did something formal.
Okay,
we did
yeah.
RFPs in the past. We did it for a broker for insurance. We didn't have a broker. So I did an RFP to get the broker to cover health insurance.
Right.
We had one for liability. So whenever we're looking at, new services or different things like that, we have done an RFP over threshold. We don't pay over, I can do it. Majority of them come out of secondary roads, but our facilities target get one session a year, and I think it's like $113 maybe. I'm trying to remember.
Sure.
I don't see
sure.
that anymore per hearing. Oh, $35.
Oh, it's
so
$35.
It's very available now. Mm-hmm. I would guess that most of our states are turned across the healthcare industry. I could be wrong, because I know the rates do change a little bit between providers, but. Mm-hmm. I can reach out and make sure the cost that we're paying is that's where the board wants us to go. I would like to keep everything, but altogether, whether it's pre-employment, drug screening, hearing agreements, things like that, I think there's a real benefit.
There is some benefit to that, because if you find something through that, you can do an easily referral to someone. You also have that close proximity. You've got the business right here within Story County. I do recognize, though, what you're saying, though, as well as there may be something else through someone else within our community that might be doing equal or more that you might want to take a look at, but I agree there is something just from other organizations that I've worked with that you that one stop shop is the better way to kind of go.
I think we'd want to stay with that for sure, not have lots of providers out there, because that just makes more complexity and harder to communicate. But looking at what prices are available and prices, if you could do that, I mean, that lets us know, are we getting the best making the best use of taxpayer money. We need to do that. So if you would do some looking and let us know whether you think mm-hmm. we should pursue it further, but not to request a formal
proposal,
study
right.
or proposal.
And right. not to hold this up. Okay.
Yes.
Just to, for going forward in the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay.
Lisa, did you have anything?
I didn't.
Okay.
But I'm going to look through and make sure on my little notes that I put on slide that I didn't have anything that.
Okay. Doris, did you have anything else?
I'm almost done. No, that was it. Those were my two questions.
Okay. Thank you, Alyssa. Todd, is there anything else that you want to?
I just want to as far as cost goes, we're going to see probably a little bit of increased cost because we've identified a few areas that this program does apply to that haven't used it in the past. So there'll be some more hearing protection being done, some more training being done on it, but it is very important, and it's one of those take-home things that people don't realize, but it does carry over pretty quickly and easily. And I'm happy to see us moving forward with it and getting it all instilled and in place. So thank you guys for this opportunity.
Well, it's protection that we should offer our employees, so thank you for all your hard work on it. Yeah. Now, what is the next step? Does this go up for 7-day review?
No.
No.
It's a safety program.
Yeah. Safety does not. Okay, thank you.
Each department, so one, if the board chooses to approve it, then it would be placed out on the intranet, just like our hazard recognition program, and each department and office will be able to download it and then apply it to their location, because there are a few specific spots that have to be filled out for location or office or department.
Super. So, and I will admit that, I mean, you did a very thorough job at 15 pages, and I mean, I learned more about hearing safety and hearing process. Yeah. So I don't remember. Are we giving the departments, 90 days to come up to speed with this, or are they going to need to start designating a leader right away?
So we'll talk, it'll be brought to the safety committee tomorrow if it's approved, and we'll start getting it rolled out that way. But yeah, it's generally about 90 days. Secondary roads right now, it really impacts them, but this can be a pretty busy time of year for them. Mm-hmm. So obviously I'll work with Lori and Darren and implement it, in a convenient way. It's nothing worse than having it just dumped on you when you're busy. So we'll get it implemented and get it processed. But, yeah, the expectation is about a 90-day window. Okay.
So any other questions or discussion?
No, I just want to say thank you, too. I certainly learned a lot on it and had to look up some of the terminology as well just to make sure on it. But appreciate it. And, I really appreciate the work that you've done to ensure that our employees are safe in their work environment.
Thank you.
So then I would entertain a motion to approve the hearing conservation program.
I would so move that we approve the hearing conservation program as presented.
I'll second.
Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Edney?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Approved.
Thank you very much.
We'll head on to department reports right now. Engineer Darren Moon with a quarterly report. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning.
Where have we seen you lately?
Yeah, right.
Just yesterday. He said, I'll tell you about that tomorrow. So tomorrow to come.
A couple of those in here.
Yeah.
Okay, let me start out on the maintenance side of things. Winter overtime and salt uses has been a bit lower than normal this year so far, but as you know, that can change quickly in January and February, and this week's already kind of changing over. We're using a lot of salt with these ice events, and Friday sounds like it's brewing to be a pretty good storm again with high winds and a lot more snow, so this weekend could get interesting. The warmer weather this fall has allowed us to complete more culvert repair, ditch cleaning, and tower repair work. Work orders, I show you this once a year, just a snapshot of our work order system. These are all the completed work orders in the county. You can't see the details, but I think 500 to 600 work orders we completed this year. Most of those are public-generated calls. The warmer weather, like I said, has allowed us to get some of that work done. Just to give you a few unique things that we did recently in the past 3 months. This was up on E18. We replaced a box culvert underneath E18 here about 10 years ago, and it's settled over time, which happens. You can see these holes is where we slab-jacked it a number of years ago, where they pumped concrete in to level it back out. But we had some sections in here. Why it was unique is there's some... We had some steel bars in here that was holding the concrete up, so it was acting like a springboard. So every time a truck went over this, it would just pound the concrete, and it would keep lifting back up. So it was just starting to destroy it and kick chunks out. Otherwise, it would have just settled rather than destroy the concrete. So we had to get in there really quick the next week and patch that. That was in November. So we did that, tore the concrete out in the morning, patched it. PC needs cure time. We got a full day, so we opened it the next day at noon, but we're all getting, it's hard to close any road these days without getting a flood of complaints, so we got to open as quick as we could, but I would have liked to get a little bit more cure time on this, but the complaints started rolling in. It was harvest time, and they were hauling a lot of grain in this direction, so we got to open as quick as we possibly could. Another kind of unique one, this is Boone County Line, Eagle Ridge. It's a nice subdivision in the back. We had a ditch in the road ditch that started really roading into one of the yards and had a nice tree in their backyard. You could really walk underneath this tree. It was like suspended in midair. It eroded underneath the tree, so we had to come in there. We backfilled underneath, and we actually built a dam here and put a tile in to take the water underground to keep the water underground as much as possible to prevent that erosion in the future. And I think the tree is safe, but we'll see what time does to that. We had a week or two stretch there where we had such a wet fall, the farmers finally had to make the decision, no matter how muddy it was, to get the crops out. So we had some real muddy conditions. This is just on a pavement, but a lot of the gravels had it much worse where they track mud out. And so we were spending a lot of time plowing mud off the pavements and the gravel roads, but that's just part of rural living. Some bridge repair we did. This is on a bridge over by Colo in between Lincoln Highway and Highway 30, a little traveled road. So the three-span bridge had two piles needed fixed in this abutment. And then at the pier needed two pile repairs and then one pile repair on the other side. You can see it's a longer bridge on a low travel road. So these are the ones that are really trying to do these types of repairs and buy some time on this, because it may come to the point at some point where we don't replace it at all. We're going to have to close it because it's hard to afford a $500,000 bridge on a road that gets very little traffic. This is another one from our bridge inspections. The edge of the decks, we get these a lot on the old concrete bridges. You can see right through there. So they finally said you need to restrict that. So we moved the guardrail out a foot, and these signs have now been moved further out. We had some temporary signs that got run over, which happens a lot, but that's what that sign there is crushed. But we might look at doing some concrete repairs at some point to get it wider, or maybe a full bridge replacement if we can get that in the program. Fortunately, I talked a little bit about frost boils again. There's some concern with this wet fall that could lead to a lot more moisture in the ground and the conditions we had last fall. If we get that hard freeze, it freezes it deeper again, we could have another bad frost boil season. Another reason I want to bring it up is we had at our engineers conference, that was of course a big topic of our discussion. We have a conference every December, so there's a lot of presentations on how people dealt with it, and every county and state dealt with the same thing. This is an older picture of frost boil problems. I just wanted to point out, you can kind of see the crust that's created and the cracks in it, and you can see how big of a bump that is, and people tend to use the same wheel paths, especially when semis are hauling on the roads, and that's what causes most of our big frost boils. They say, why don't you just come out here and blade that off with a mortar grader and smooth it out? We try to keep that crust on there as long as possible, because once you open that up, it's like 3 to 4 foot of absolute muck. So that's why we don't come out and just chop that off right away. And that was mostly what the presentations talked about, is patience. This time is the only thing that will heal it. We saw a lot of these photos of people getting out there too early with the heavy mortar graders and just sinking out of sight, getting stuck. One thing we're fortunate, the livestock was talked about a lot. There was counties with 300 to 500 CAFOs that had probably 2 days worth of feed supply that had to get in there every 2 days, and they dealt with it a lot more than we did. So we're a little bit fortunate with that, but just wanted to point that out. Some counties dealt with it a lot. They were forced to get out there and try to maintain it, and more pictures of what happens when you get out there too early. This kind of shows when people say, just throw some more rock out there. You can see the amount of rock they tried to put on it, and there's no amount of rock when the base is that soft that's going to support the vehicles. Again, the theme was sunshine and time. sometimes doing nothing is the right thing, as hard as it is to not do something, but sometimes that's the right answer. And I took a lot of calls in the spring and tried to explain that to the people best we could. Move on to construction. We just had one project from 2019 that wasn't completed, my last quarterly report, and that was this Palestine box culvert. It's a SWAP project for federal aid SWAP program. It was $234,000, which we really debated a bridge or a box culvert on this, and we decided to go with the box, even though it had a bend in it. And that ended up actually saving us a lot of money, $234,000. Bridge probably would have came in at $350,000 to $400,000, so it ended up saving us quite a bit of money with the box. This is what the bridge looked like before, an old arch. And from the top, it's fairly narrow. You can see people run into these concrete walls. This is the box going in. You can kind of see a little bit where the bend starts. When we fabricate bends into these larger structures, it starts to get a little expensive, but this one ended up being not much more than a straight box, so we're very happy with the cost. And then the finished product, again, no head walls are gone, and you can see this side because it bends into the stream. We had to match the stream. Moving on to this year's construction, 11 projects are planned, but as you see, there's some question marks when we get down towards the end here. But starting out, Hickory Grove overlay, Lincoln 20 box culvert. These four February are going to be February local lettings here at a board meeting. Lincoln 1 bridge will be let this month, actually tomorrow, through the DOT, and that's a farm to market bridge. Union 17 bridge has already been let through the DOT last month, and that's a SWAP project again. Our estimate was like $599, and it came in at $578, so it's a decent price on that. Then we get down to the bonding projects, and let's start getting some question marks. I'll get into that in my next topic here on why we're having some issues with some of these bonding projects. Timberland Drive is the one we agreed to help Story City with a possible subdivision. I'm working on with them on the timing. We talked a little bit yesterday. This is another project Scott Renault was working with me on, and I just kind of verified yesterday again that he no longer works there, so I'm going to have to find a new contact person to get the true timing of that project. Collins 26, we're going to tie this probably in the letting with this other box culvert and tie those two together, so that'll probably be a February letting. If for some reason we expect this to be a fall construction, but if for some reason the contractor really wants to get in here and do this early, I'll probably come back to the board, maybe switch that back to local funding or something so we don't have to bond for just that one project. But we're pretty certain that'll happen in the fall. And this last project, we're going to just delay this one a year to 20 because that's just a pipe, and they could come in very quickly and do that one. We don't want that to initiate the bonding sooner than we have to.
If we could go back to the Union 17 bridge okay. with the swap.
Sure.
Has there been any feedback that you're aware of, either to us or to the DOT, from organized labor or anyone else about the swap and how that's impacted, you know, the wage scale?
The biggest thing is, and that was the biggest pushback to the whole swap, they thought it would, our federal aid projects require Davis-Bacon wages. It's a little bit of a higher wage scale. They felt like that would shift where those projects would happen in the mm-hmm. county. I guess we don't see that. The projects are still happening out there. The DOT's taking all the federal aid money and using those federal aid wages on their projects, which they do anyway. And the DOT's spread throughout the entire county, so I guess we don't see that as changing the amount or the locations of those Davis-Bacon projects, but that's been a concern. I haven't heard back on if that's really affecting things or not.
Okay.
But it is, yeah, it's kind of a complicated one to
track. I didn't know that was part of the issue when
we
discussed this 2 years ago. Yeah, okay, thank you.
Move on to some of the actual issues. Oh, first, I forgot to touch base. This SWAP project was the first project where the board was able to approve the resolution to approve it, and, but yet have me sign the electronic documents, which mm-hmm. is a lot of counties had the same issues we did. The chair changed every January, and that's when we're doing our lettings, and you had to go through the process of getting approval to sign, and mm-hmm. it was just a hassle for everybody. And the electronic documents are intended to speed up the process, and it was actually slowing it down. So they got legal opinions through the DOT that that's allowable for the board to give the engineer the authority to do it now. So that's a good change.
Great. Thank you.
The first bonding project is the 13th Street paving. So there's a number of issues we've run into with this. Somewhat unanticipated right away. We're having issues with purchasing right away. First of all, when we talk about right of way, our negotiations are confidential until we come to an agreement and they come to the board for approval. So I don't really can't get into the details of the discussion. I'm just going to talk in generalities here. If we want to get into some details, we'll have to go to a closed session sometime and talk about it. But we've kind of not so much a dead end, but this property owner, Snowbirds, they go south for the winter, and they did that a couple weeks ago, so we've kind of postponed negotiations until the spring, just to give you an idea why there's a little bit of a wait there. Always with right-of-way negotiations, there's money issues with our offer per acre, but there is a couple more issues with this project in particular. The property owner that we are having the issue with probably owns 78% of the land out there, so we've stopped talking to the rest of the property owners. We think they're all okay with the project. Two of the issues are there's that railroad crossing here on 580th, and one of the reasons we are proposing to pave this is if that ever gets closed, Ames comes in, it's south of the tracks is in Ames now, and if they build a bunch of new sidings for the railroad, that crossing is almost going to have to be closed. And if that happens, this will get a lot more traffic up here because it won't be able to get across. There's no crossing here. So that was one of the reasons we added this as a paving project. And this one, the landowner did not want that to be closed and force more traffic through his area. So he's concerned about that. Mm-hmm. The other concern is...
Do we know if there's... Have you talked with anybody at Ames?
Have not yet. Okay. We got a little time.
You could get some more information.
I asked at that visioning deal, but nobody seemed to know what that means, so I'll try to find somebody else to talk to.
Okay.
The only time I've mentioned it, I think I mentioned it to the mayor on two separate locations, occasions, you know, but that wouldn't be on his detail radar to necessarily pass along, but since I drive it a lot, and having driven it for the last 3 years and the amount of flooding that goes there and whatever, but as far as the railroad crossing and being closed, more and more there's traffic, railroad traffic, that's blocking it.
Sure.
And then you can't even go to 600th and go down, although I don't, you know, hear and stuff.
Yep.
So I've seen much more of going into Nevada the back way and hitting S-14 than I ever expected to do.
Yep. Some of the other issues are with the city of Nevada city manager change. We need to have an agreement because they actually own the entire roadway for this half a mile, and this board has agreed to put that into our bonding project and pay for that half a mile. And there was kind of an informal agreement that the city of Nevada, this half a mile is still gravel, that they would pay this portion to make the connection. So two things, I haven't been able to get that agreement done to allow us to pave in the city limits. I want to make sure there's an agreement in place before we go ahead and do that. So I'm waiting for a new manager to talk to with that. But I did talk to their consultant about this stretch and where they are with paving, and he more or less indicated that was not even budgeted and not really on their radar, and they don't necessarily think that's something they need to do. So that was kind of a surprise. So if we do this paving, we could end up with a half mile of gravel stretch here for a while. So when a new manager, city manager comes in, I'll address that with that person again. So at this point in time, we've just decided to go ahead and delay this a year. There's no real big rush to get this paved, so we'll start right-of-way negotiations up again this spring, and in the summer we hope to have some more answers on what we're really looking at here. So, and I anticipate we'll probably have to come back to the board. I'm going to need to know two things in our negotiation. What is going to be our top dollar per acre for land? We have it professionally appraised, so we have a dollar amount from a professional appraiser. We upped that offer above that a little bit, but to go much further, I'm going to need some input from the board. The other issue is, if we don't get anywhere with that, is the board going to consider condemnation for the right-of-way? That's something previous boards have not wanted to go to, and I understand that, so I'll need to get some feedback from you where, if you think this project is important enough to do that. So.
Because that one owner owns what percent of the land?
I think it's about 70 or 80%. It's considerable. And the other issue that I didn't mention is that this person is not real happy with how the DD5 situation ended up, so that was kind of bad timing to start negotiations at that point. So just to make you aware of that. The next project is the Huxley project. Good news, this sounds like it's still on track to be possibly let this late winter, early spring. They had a public meeting a couple weeks ago in Huxley I went to, with just to inform the landowners down here what's going on. Most of the landowners were there. There's two in the county here. Both of those property owners were there and informed. Most of the questions revolved around conservation, and Mike is working on a paving project to pave this stretch of the hard Iowa Trail through here. You can see the gravel road currently bends. The plan is to pave it straight through, so there'll have to be some changes to the bike path and coordination with his plans. And there's some subdivisions in the city right here that they're very interested in how those bike paths will connect and whether there'll be a tunnel underneath the pavement. And the city pretty much said no, that they did some estimates that it was $100,000 to $200,000 to take the bike path under the pavement, so it'll be an at-grade crossing for the bike path. But those are some of the concerns that came up. I'm still waiting to get, after the public meeting, they're going to kind of put some more final plans together to send to the county for review. I haven't got those yet. But so far, this is still on track. And so in my mind, I think this is the project that'll trigger bonding for us. We reimburse the city $1 million once it's done. So even if they let it now, it wouldn't be till fall, so that we'd be looking for that money at the earliest. The next project I want to talk about, this one wasn't scheduled till FY21, but it kind of indicated when we put this on the program, I was concerned about some issues, and they're kind of coming to life. There's some large utility transmission lines that went along here, and what they did is they placed it 1 foot outside our road right-of-way line. So we can't force them to move at their cost. Usually utilities go in the public right-of-way, so if they need to be moved, they have to pay to move it. But at the time they put these in here, they asked the county if we had plans to pave this, and we didn't at the time because we were just getting finished up paving and upgrading R38. So we took this off our program and didn't think we'd ever pave it. So that's probably part of why they put it just outside. I wish they would have given us a little more buffer, but we have no control outside on private property. So when we pave a road, this is the existing gravel road ditch. When we pave it, we raise it up and we widen the shoulders out for safety. And then we have a certain clear zone distance here that, for safety reasons, when a car exits the road, there has to be a 4-to-1 slope. So they don't overturn, or they can recover off a 4-to-1 slope. And then if we put this in and left the poles where they are, one, they'd be right in the ditch bottom. So if a car did go off, these are bigger poles, they would more than likely hit these poles if they went off. And two, to put the ditch in here, we'd have to excavate some of the earth from the pole, which is not allowed, because you'd be surprised, there's not that much pole in the ground when they do these. So they don't allow any dirt to be taken off, otherwise it makes them a little bit unstable. So on one side of the road we have the power poles, the other side we have a bigger rural water line than we anticipated. It's a main line. So the estimate to move these, if we needed to move, would be, they gave us the estimate of 1.4 something million. The water line to move was about $350,000. I started looking at some options of shifting the whole road to the west. We'd still have to move the water line, but shifting the road's not ideal because we lose the road grade. Let me show you a picture. Here's a picture. These are those poles I'm talking about. It's hard to tell, but they're not that far off the edge of the road. For safety, it's a concern. And then if we shift the road to the west, we open up some other things, like this could be a historic building, Black's Heritage Farm. It's already close, but if we shift the road 10, 12 feet to the west, we're really getting into that building. And there's some other issues at the south end with the culvert that's there. I don't have a photo. Yeah. There's a large culvert here, and designing that for a 55-mile-an-hour speed is nearly impossible. I think the best we could do is about a 40-mile-an-hour design speed with the hills in there and saving the existing culvert. We'd have to guardrail it, but so we have some speed issues at the south end. The cost is originally was estimated for 530, this is 2.7. We either move the poles or the water line. You know, we're talking $3.5 to $4 million already, and then we're still ending up with a project that isn't ideal. So we might want to. We can talk about it. We're going to have our five-year program meeting up about a month from now. We can talk about it there more in detail. How big of a priority this project is for us? Or do we want to look at some other routes? The bad news. We really debated between paving 260th over R38 or going south. Those power poles come up here, and then they go down the same way over there. And Mike is currently designing his bike path right on the other side of those power poles. The bike path is going to come down here and go across. And the water line actually goes over that way, too, but I don't think it would be quite the cost for the water line. The big question is whether Iowa State really wants it paved through here, because that would really speed up the traffic through their ag facilities out here. So we'd have to have some discussions with them before we really change tracks. And with the timing of the bonding, we would probably just have to do another bond down the road if we wanted to change gears at this point. But
because the request was, particularly Iowa State was pushing for it, and then it related to the research park. And then some more growth headed further south, right from the existing city
limits. I believe so. I don't.
Yeah.
This was a board priority to get paved, not so much coming from me. So I don't know what was all behind paving this stretch. I know it was people getting access to the research park, but the DOT has improved Highway 69 up here access, so they could still use Riverside, but there'd be a little backtracking. I somewhat like this a little bit better because we get a lot of traffic on Zumwalt. R38 traffic wanting to get over this area has to take a gravel to get over there right now. So I almost like 260 is better. And I don't think R38 traffic is going to want to go through the town of Kelly to come up to it, but who knows.
Yeah, you're right. We can talk about it more, but it was a request related to the research park and growth to the south.
And it'd be interesting to see what Ames does with their 2040 plan also, because they were talking, some of the input there was real concern about Ames moving into that area that was so intensified with State Farms. So it all kind of fits together.
So back to the bonding discussion, this is where I kind of currently stand with these yellow numbers, what year I'm anticipating things to happen. Assuming right-of-way negotiations go well this spring, 13th Street should happen in 21 now. 530th, I'm not sure at this point. 560th still looks like a go in either 20 or 21. And that's the one that will probably trigger the timing of the bond. E18, that's just the overlay project, highway maintenance, so that will still happen in 21. Timberland, I'm trying to get the timing down on that when the city wants to pave that. Collins Bridge, like I said, we have some options on moving that back if we had to. And then New Albany will move back to 21 so it doesn't trigger bonding any sooner. So that's kind of where we stand on those now. I think Lucy's trying to set up a conference call with the bonding attorney so we could discuss, one, if we want to reduce the amount. I don't think that's an issue, if what the possibilities are there. And then the timing of the whole bonding. If we bond yet this fall, how much time do we have, 3 more years beyond that, to get the construction done? Or did the initial bonding, when you had the hearings for the initial bonding, did that start the 3-year time frame that we had to have all the money spent? Because if that's the case, it's really going to be hard to delay anything any further. But we'll talk about this all again at the 5-year program discussion, where we want to head with it. One last quick item that wasn't on the agenda here. It's a recent item under construction design. We usually do all of our in-house design, but we went out to a consultant for the Skunk River Bridge on 150th Street just to get that one designed and on the shelf. There's not really any timing to letting yet. And the other reason we sent it to a consultant, because we knew there was going to be some it's a difficult hydraulic design with the location and the road issues. And you've already approved the consultant contract, but we did run into some of those issues, and it's going to take an addendum and some additional special design for the piers and the beams. So it's going to be an additional $15,000 to the consultant for special design that wasn't planned up front. So there will be an addendum that comes through the board here probably next week that you'll see through WHKS, and that's what it's for. But it's going to be necessary. That's probably going to be $1 million bridge at least. Moving on, the 5-year construction program workshop. I have the proposed date of that for Tuesday, February 25th. So look at that day on your calendar, and then I'll probably work through Sandra to help get the hearing notice up here. It's not a hearing, it's a workshop, so at least the public notice up here for that meeting. But let me know if that date is a problem for you in the afternoon of the 25th. We used to do it as part of the board meeting, but we decided to split it up and do it in the afternoon now to give it its own special time. A couple upcoming public hearings. We have to do a paving point hearing for 560th, that's the Huxley paving, and 535th Avenue paving, that's the little stretch for the bike trail, the Heart of Iowa Trail. Those didn't meet the paving points, so we have to have hearings, and I have that scheduled for February 11th at this point. I need to get those done before we actually have the lettings later in February. And then there's a road vacation hearing for some Iowa Center roads that need to be vacated, but that's still to come. I haven't set the date on that yet. The Federal Bridge Bundling Grant, as you know, we got a grant for about 55% of the cost of this E18 bridge circled here. One of the things that go along with that grant is we have to bundle with another county, and Franklin County is the county we're bundling a similar bridge with. But one county has to be the lead, and Story County, we have agreed to take the lead on that. We're staffed a little bit better to do that. And with that comes, it's a little odd, we will be accepting their bids and approving a project in another county. That's something we've never done, and I don't know if that's ever been done in the state before, but with the bundling thing, all the counties have to do that. So the DOT is helping us out. They're drafting a 20E agreement that will allow us to do that share with the other county. And then I'll be working with the county attorney to make sure all his concerns are taken care of. The good news is there's no local funding in either one of the bridges. So it's all federal aid and the SWAP money, so it all funnels through the DOT and not the counties. That helps some of my concerns in getting stuck with local funding for another bridge in another county. It's a little odd, but this is what the feds require for these bundling projects. So as soon as the DOT gets that 2080 going, I'll bring it to the board for review and send it through Ethan first. Shop updates. The new salt bin at Kelly Shed has been completed. A couple pictures of that. We did the slab with our in-house crews. Took 3 pours. This is the last pour down the middle. And then we purchased the blocks from Manasse and put those in ourselves, and then the hoop installer came in and installed the hoop in December. That's going to get us about 500 tons of extra salt storage, so that's really going to help us stock up so we don't have a supply issue come late winter. We're keeping the salt off here this winter to make sure this gets cured out. Salt can do some damage to brand new concrete at times, so we're just playing it safe. And the other outshed issue is the McCallsburg shed. We did get that east wall and front door issue fixed with the contractor, and it looks really good. So we've moved back in and occupied that shed again, and we plan to just stay out of that shed for the time being. We talked a little bit yesterday about the shed north of it possibly purchasing, and if that owner comes back with a reduced price, we may consider it, but at this point, we're happy with our existing shed. Next area, turbine blade replacements. Most of the hauling has been completed, so each turbine required 3 new blades to be hauled in, and then some of the engine parts. So we had about 500 oversized permits. We approved for that. The hauling part's done. They're still installing the blade. They're all laying out on site. Picture of the large cranes that are used to put those up. I want to point that out because these tracks are about 30 foot wide apart, and our gravel roads are usually 26 to 28 foot wide, so they can't really take those down gravel roads. They mostly cross. It's very expensive to disassemble them and reassemble them a mile away, so they like to track them the most they can, so they go across the private farm ground. There were two stretches where the farmers won't allow it, and it was only a couple hundred feet on a county road, so we allow them to widen the county road and stretches. But all that work's been done, and they removed what they widened. And we had two incidents where these had to cross pavements, so they have to actually close the road and put at least a foot of sand over the pavement to bridge, so there's no pavement damage when they bridge it. One of them we did at 3 o'clock in the morning, so that didn't impact traffic a whole lot, but the other one was closed during the day, but they both went well. So all that, those issues should be taken care of, just they're still installing the turbines on, but I think we're done with all the crossings, and it's went well. Level B road issues. Wanted to kind of just give you, we had an issue pop up, but this is kind of a general discussion on Level B roads. We had a farmer that farms on a Level B road put some pretty large rocks blocking access to the road. There's a four-way intersection right here you can't see, so this is somebody traveling through that intersection could possibly not see these rocks, so it would have been a bad situation. Somebody hit those, they're big enough to do some damage to a car. So we got those removed immediately, different view. That's where those rocks were placed here. That's a steeper slope than it looks in the picture, so they could have been hidden if you came up on it. To talk about the issues with Level B roads a little bit, we have about 25 miles of Level B roads left. They're signed with limited maintenance, enter at your own risk. They're essentially there for property access only. Because somebody's landlocked in here, that's the only way they can get to their property. That's the only reason it's there. And these roads are not graded properly for drainage and everything. That's probably why they became a dirt road, because they never did drain right and they couldn't keep it up. But that's what's going on in this stretch. You can see the landowner. We do not rock them. The landowner brought rock out himself, and that's what spurred this issue. He had been putting rock to get to his property, and from time to time we come out and blade it to smooth out the ruts, and he was trying to prevent that from happening, so he didn't want to lose his rock. I try to allow the private owners to do what they want on the roads to some extent. We need to have them stay safe. We had some issues where people built up berms with dirt and stuff. That can't happen. It still has to be passable and safe. But if they want to haul some rock to it to get access, I allow it. But that does bring up these issues with them. They assume that that's their rock they paid for, so if we damage it, then they get upset and we're liable. But what do you do? It's
under what conditions can we vacate a Level B?
Well, that's what we always strive for, is if land changes hands and there's no landlocked properties, we always push to vacate those roads. But when somebody's left landlocked, it's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
how many miles? Did you say 25?
We have about 25 left, yeah.
They're mile stretches each?
Not all of them.
Okay.
The majority of them are. I think this is 2 miles. I think that there's a mile south of this at level B as well. But just kind of, he was pretty upset and talked about coming to the board possibly, so you may hear from him, but I just wanted to give you some background on it. I think we got it resolved. He knows he can't put the rocks across the road anymore. But that's why he did it, one, to keep traffic off or from damaging it, because we have the mudders. That's that, when Marty was here at the board, that was one of his, he wanted to stop getting those mudders because they destroy the road and then the farmer can't get down it when they need it. But that's another difficult one to stop from happening. It's hard to catch them out there in the act. Sometimes you can, you know, the vehicles when you see them completely covered in mud where they've probably been, but and it is still a public road. So to ticket them, you'd have to somewhat prove that they were intentionally damaging the road. So it's a tough one to deal with, but this just came up recently, so I wanted to give you a heads up. The Ames MPO Forward 2045 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, that's the visioning workshop I attended a couple weeks ago. That was more, they had a public session. They basically put out maps and just circled areas, and they didn't limit what was circled. So it was basically then kind of, this was more the tech committee side that we put our ideas on the map. There'll be another session down the road where we start prioritizing everything that's circled on those maps. And then I believe, Loris, it comes to the policy committee. I'll let you know when that next meeting is, but I don't know if what the next step really is for them if it comes to the policy to help prioritize all those visions. But the other side of that, as you know, is the Ames 2040 plan, which is going to drive a lot of the transportation needs. Once they decide on which quadrants they're going to go to, we'll have to focus on the transportation needs in that area. So as part of the visioning, I, of course, circled the three intersections here at the northwest part of the city that we're dealing with now. And I know, Loris, that you and Linda both commented at that meeting, and then there was a private individual that commented on Grant and West 190th intersection backing up with traffic. So we know that's an issue, and we passed that concern on to the city. Now that we determine both sides of that intersection is technically under city jurisdiction.
Did you ever get anything back from the city after you pointed that out to them?
I did not get a response to that.
So they didn't say no, we disagree or anything like
no.
that, but it's pretty clear that that whole intersection is theirs.
And I brought that up when I went up and spoke at the very end of the meeting. I weighed in on remember that some of the roads we've already got, you know, that would be county roads now or whatever, that, you know, for transportation flow, and like North Dakota, okay. But I also brought up the point that we've sent the letter to them.
Yep, good.
Yeah. Okay. It's all theirs.
Just give an update. The board approved this agreement to put up the Jefferson Highway signs. The DOT paid for them through a grant and helped us install them. We had the Lincoln Highway signed, I don't know, 8 to 10 years ago, and now the Jefferson Highway has been completed, so those signs are now up. And then my favorite topic is the drainage districts. So there's a few issues there. This is a good update. This has been on our agenda for years. Fernald, this is John Hunter, has wanted this pond's water, and he wanted us to put a tile in over the district tile. The green line is the district tile in Fernald. For many years, he wanted that done, and this tree was also an issue. We got that removed this year, and our crews installed the tile. So that is finally complete, and I won't have to update you on it anymore.
Thank you.
His only request now, he was very appreciative of this work. He would like a crossroad pipe, which I'm not ready to do quite yet. One, that could bring more water over onto him, so I'm kind of surprised he wants that. But I want to see how well this tile works before we do any crossroad pipe there. And then at some point, we may consider just vacating this road to get it out of the county's jurisdiction. There's really no public need for it anymore. Next issue, DD5, I don't have a picture of that, but I've been getting some complaints at the south end of just some general maintenance that needs to be done. I've let the board know of that, and I think we're going to plan to address that in one of our next hearings with that district. The new issue with 5 is the City of Ames had a hearing on their utility extension through this area. It includes water and sewer on Lincoln Highway in the road right of way. But I discussed that with Kent, whether we should be, as a district, still permit their work, even though it's in their road right of way. And he thought we should still permit that, which I agree, especially now because I got the plans from the city on what they plan to do. And it doesn't look like they accounted for the district tile. I think they're going to be in conflict. And you can't just move district tile elevations. They're pretty well set in stone. So I've notified the city they're going to need a permit, and they're working with Kent to work through that permit process. But this should not have been a surprise with the city, because DD5, Loris, you were probably at the meeting a little over a year ago. Tracy Warner was there, and we let her know there's going to be a conflict there with the district tile. And, but they had the project designed and ready to let, and I think they're in conflict. So I was like, you got to get this resolved before you let this project. So Kent's working on that permit. Kent worked on the Alliant, came through there just recently, so that's a permit we had to cross the district line that Kent permitted, but now we got the city.
It came up, just the topic in general, came up also at the Ames Economic Development Commission Executive Board meeting a month ago.
Okay.
The Executive Committee, just in general, about related to, there's a couple of big businesses that are looking at the park, but no names, no, you know, it's just all in the inquiry stage. But then there was about running the utilities, and Dan Colhane had made a comment about it. And but it sounded like that Tracy and her department were going ahead and working. It sounded like it was coordinated. So
okay.
To hear from you now, not that the Colhane would have the insight on it, but it sounds like now that, yeah, we definitely, I'm surprised that they're still wanting to go ahead. It was very clear, and just quick background is, it came to our attention in last November, a year ago, November or December, and it was just kind of a comment-to-comment person that we realized that they had this plan going and that they thought they could just run utilities. We had to talk to Jessica Reynolds about, and Jessica had to come forward and say the law is very clear that drainage districts take precedent. We did have a hearing. Tracy was here, also John Hall representing the AADC were here. They were concerned about it, that they would have to redraw them, but it was very clear that that they needed to go around us.
Yep.
So, okay, thank you. So you're going to make a call on that, or do you want one
yes.
of us?
No, I've already worked with Kent and the city, so now I've got the city working directly with Kent
okay.
to submit the permit to him. He's reviewed the plans, but it wasn't detailed enough with depth, so they need to supply more information before we can approve it.
I guess one thing probably moving forward with the people who are involved in possible development over at Prairie View, et cetera, Dustin's here, so he can carry that back, is making sure that they know, Dustin, you know, that somebody at the AADC who's working with these two companies knows that there mm-hmm. may be some kind of reroute or delay or whatever. Just, I mean, because they're not going to be talking to us, Kent, obviously,
yeah.
and I don't know if they'll be talking to Tracy at some point.
Okay.
Thanks.
The next one is DD-115. That's a Huxley project. There's kind of two issues going on here. The new high school was built here, which appears to be right over the district tile. We were not really aware of that till recently, so we're going to do some research and see what they did. We heard some rumors they may have rerouted it. We don't know at this point what happened there, but it's not really an issue right now, but we need to figure out where the district tile is. The bigger issue is up here. The district tile goes through these new building lots. This one right here, I believe, they started digging the basement and hit the district tile. And so they had to stop because they needed to go much deeper than that. But we come to find out when the city paved this street, they connected the district tile into the new storm sewer and took it down the storm sewer and then outletted it. So it took quite a while to get an answer from the consultants that did the road, what they actually did, but just recently we found out that's what they did. So we can finally give the homeowner approval to continue because that stretch of district tile has been abandoned. So we're going to have to update the district records on what happened to the tile through here.
Darren, have you had any opportunity then to talk to the city, with the new administrator, but the public works person is still the same person, right? Yeah. That's a long-term person. To determine what we can do, or should supervisors be going out and making a contact with them?
I've discussed with them, and his general opinion is it's the developer's responsibility. The issue here is just nobody knows it's even there most of the time, so nobody even knows to look for it. So the city only has a couple tiles, so I will kind of reiterate to him that it would be very helpful. You only have a couple tiles. If you can keep track of where those are, and if you have developments in the area, please pass that along.
We talked about this at a previous meeting. How did we educate the developers? And I think, the determination was they all know what they should or should not, be doing. It's just sometimes they take a different avenue.
Yep.
Well, they're having to pick up the bill for those people, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and the same thing with the school. We had no idea that was happening. So. We didn't know the tile was that close. We didn't even think to look at it because we didn't know the tile went right through there. But it does. So,
is it recently annexed at all or no?
This portion here was more recently, I believe.
Because I'm thinking it's during the annexation process, certainly when they run through abstracts and such, they would come across this.
Well, that's a good point. I don't know if that's something they check into or not. I just know we've got that into Beacon now where every property shows the district that it's in. That's a good step to notify people there's a district.
Cool.
Yeah. But other than that, it's difficult to get the word out sometimes. But
to make people care.
Yeah, that's the other problem.
I know that there's a couple of local groups related to real estate and development. Do you think it might be if you could ask to be put on their agenda to speak, that would be helpful?
It wouldn't hurt. Just trying to. It usually happens around the cities, so I think just educating the cities that have districts.
Okay.
Any district subdivision that comes in, we review that, and I check that every time. So I catch that.
Administration's always going to be.
It's going to be around cities, so.
Yeah, and they're going to be giving approval for development to continue for.
Yeah, so I think we talked a little bit about notifying the city that have district tile reminder. So I think that's probably the best step is to.
Okay. All right.
How much they care.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just that they went over it or whatever. They moved it.
Right.
So they knew it was there. They knew what it was, we assumed. So,
yeah. You said they tied it into a storm sewer?
Yeah.
And then they tied it back into the tile?
Does
that mean that more water's going into that tile?
No, this is toward the end of the district, so it's just essentially dumping it into the storm sewer and outletting right here. So it doesn't have far to get out. But the interesting thing is if you go out there, usually storm sewers don't run all the time, but you go out there and there's this kind of a roar constantly under the ground because that tile is running constantly. So there's cities that had a bunch of calls saying, you got a problem out here, and they're like, no, it's just the district tile constantly running under there.
City created the problem.
Yeah. So let them answer the phone.
I think so.
So right now everything's been resolved, but we need to check into where, update our maps where the tile actually is out there. The next one's kind of a similar issue. We've talked about this. Loris, you're aware of it, I know. Yes. Linda, you were around at the time. This is Weeks down at Slater.
Mm-hmm.
Kent got involved approving the detention pond and outletting into the district tile, but leaving the district tile where it's at. But now the subdivision is asking, which it figured was coming, to reroute the tile that goes right through these lots. So I redirected him. The trustees decided that they should be working directly through Kent to get these types of issues approved.
And the concern in general was on the Boone side, correct? That a reroute or that this pond itself, et cetera, would actually push back and there'd be pooling up at the north end of the district, right? That's what I remember from this. But
with the actual tile functioning was a concern, yes. The district, or this detention pond, went back up into Boone County. This is the Boone County line right here. So the tile we're talking about is all in Story County, but it was the Boone County residents had issues. If this tile was impacted, they'd be getting the ponding of the water. So they were very concerned that nothing happened to the tile.
Okay.
So they will be working through Kent, and Kent will come to you at some point with a recommendation for the trustees whether we're going to allow those to be rerouted or not. And then this is Lincoln Way up here. That's the Jehovah's Witness Church in 590th. This district's a fairly small district, but they got all the bales removed from this site recently, so that landowner is kind of returning the ground to ag use and found a lot of tile issues left. So we had he was doing a lot of private tile work in here and found a lot of issues with the district tile. We went out and verified that. While that private contractor was in there, he gave us a pretty darn good price on replacing about 400 feet. There's four stretches that were damaged or just old, needed replaced. So that work has been done. We just got the bill yesterday, and it was just under $10,000. We agreed to do that with the existing contractor, one, because the price was good, and two, because it's such a small district, the majority landowner agreed to have this work done, so we had a lot of buy-in. So, and it's repair only, so it's work that had to be done either way, so there was no reason to have a hearing on that. So we will pay that bill out of secondary road funds and get reimbursed as soon as the district has enough funds to pay for it. Picture that work happening as the contractor doing that work. Before I get to this, just quick update on, we've got the three new employees. Jeremy Barker, assistant road maintenance superintendent, been on board a couple weeks. It's been mostly job shadowing Andrew, learning a lot. He's got a lot to learn, but I think he's going to do good. New truck driver, operator one, Joe Pierce, started just in the past couple weeks as well. And Jeff Moreland is a temporary truck driver. With the storm coming up this weekend, we have two currently off on FMLA employees and one on vacation out of the country, I believe. So those three new positions were much needed, so thank you for that. The couple items that came up after I did the agenda, this is the Highway 30 payment construction going on for the DOT. They're having a meeting on this tonight. I'll go to it, but just to give you an idea, it's strictly, as far as I know, removing the pavement and putting it back on Highway 30 through Nevada. The green lines are some of the detours, so that'll be the biggest issue with the project, is detours that'll be caused. I think when one side's getting done, they'll go head-to-head traffic on the other side, but you will not be able to get across the other lane, so that'll require some detours. These are all city, but the next one kind of shows the county ones that are concerned. The eastbound traffic will not be able to cross at 6, so they'll have to, if they want to go into town, they're going to have to come down South S Avenue Gravel and go into town that direction. And then when they get out, they're going just past S-27, so that'll be closed for a while, so there'll be a gravel detour on the south side. The north detour is paved, so that shouldn't be too big of an issue for us.
Yeah. So also, this just popped into mind. I understand this is happening down at 30, but some of this is going to occur while Nevada is also working on 6th Street up in our area, too. So lots of detours.
I'll find out more details tonight, but it's as much as I know at this point. But it really doesn't have much to do with interchanges or anything like that. So just pavement reconstruction. The other item I wanted to touch on was one of the ISAC priorities, one of their top priorities, is these weight limits on secondary roads. What that did, it allowed, they passed that in 2018, and it allowed some construction vehicles as part of a construction project to operate with some heavier trucks on county roads and bridges. What that did was force us, they estimated 3,500 bridges in the state would have to be re-rated. We've already done the rating process through our consultant, and they've come back with 20 bridges. We just got this information last week. So we got 20 bridges that will need to be posted because of this law. 20 bridges is 80 signs. Each bridge takes 4 signs. So that's a lot of signs and a lot of installation labor on our end. They tried to fight this last year, I believe. It didn't go anywhere, so we thought it was going to be done, but now it's been moved up to one of the ISAC's top priorities. So there is a chance this could get overturned. So we're going to wait 3 more months before we start the bridge posting work because it saves us a lot of time and money to not post these bridges. So that's kind of where we're at. So if you hear anything about this, you can kind of give them an idea what it would save the county if this gets overturned. And I don't know the extent of the benefit to the contractors, but I think some of it had to do with logging operations up in northeast Iowa, I believe it was. But around here, I think it was mostly Manats that lobbied for this. But they didn't, unfortunately, get a lot of input from the cities or even the state, I believe, before this law was passed. But it would have been nice for them to have this information before they passed this law because it had a pretty good impact on us. The other thing that's kind of going on with our posting right now is, speaking of Manats, it's mostly the Manats trucks. They have these SU, this is an SU-6 axles. There's SU-7 as well. It actually has 3 of these main axles and 3. I just saw one of these last week. This is something the feds have been giving us time to post, but we've also been re-rating a bunch of our bridges for this one, and there's no overturning this change, but so we got kind of 2 different posting things going on. We posted a bunch of bridges, I think it was about 10 last year because of this change, but this one could actually get overturned and save us 20 more bridges to be posted. So just wanted to give you a heads up on that. That is all I have. Any questions about anything?
No. Great report. Thank you.
Lots of information. Thank you. We'll look forward to our meeting with you next month.
Thank you.
And that date, I think, looks good, at least for me.
Okay. No. Me too. I'll check.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Now we have other reports. We have Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley to talk to us about the quarterly finance report.
I just want to make one comment. While I was listening to Darren's report, and I chuckled to myself, because every now and then I have to have a Paul Toot chuckle. And Paul said one time, he goes, "Wow, nobody ever told me how much fun drainage districts were going to be when I was running for supervisor."
Yeah. And he was a farm person.
True. And he was very familiar with drainage districts. What he wasn't aware of was how angry people got about him and how many decisions needed to be made because of him.
Mm-hmm. You just know the drainage on your own farm.
Right.
You don't think about the complaint.
Right. Mm-hmm. So why I'm really here, not to, you know, have pleasant memories or not pleasant memories, whichever way you want to put it. Quarterly report. We're 50% through the year. We've been talking about this during our budget work sessions a lot also, so that, you know, budget is a plan. It's our best plan at the time, and then we actually see what we're doing and see how we're doing. right now, or as of the end of December, we have five departments that are over the 50% of their spending. For various reasons, and none of them are very much, okay? I know we've talked to some of the departments already, so we're aware of where they're at and why. But overall, for the county, we're at 42% of our budgeted expenditures, and that's on the amended expenditures. So I think we're doing fairly well. I'm pretty pleased with the way we're heading right now. Our fund status... fund balance status as of December 31st. The general fund has 13.8 of that. In those dollars, I'm showing how much is committed for StoryCom and how much is committed for energy transfer and how much is assigned. So overall, we're at 45% of our expenditures after all those assignments. So we're doing good in the general fund. 48% of the supplemental fund has been spent. 10% of the mental health fund has been spent. That's not unusual. We don't spend that until the end of the fiscal year when the region scoops our money. Now, there is a regional, we're having a finance meeting Thursday, and in that meeting we're going to talk about sending money twice a year instead of once to the region. Which, when I say that, I mean, you know, across my desk, because we're the regional fiscal agent. But overall, we're talking about collecting twice a year from the counties, because that's when they collect their taxes, as opposed to one lump sum at the end of the year. So we won't have those dollars sitting in our fund. We'll move them to the region fund at that point.
Now that you've gone through 6 months of being the fiscal agent, how do you feel it's going from your perspective?
I guess I would look to Shelley for part of that answer. From my perspective, I think it's going really smooth. Not a lot of changes, issues, problems.
Okay.
The governing board has not come forth with any problems. They thought it's gone.
Oh, great.
That it's gone smoothly.
I was extremely amazed at how smooth the transition was. Mm-hmm. I thought that could be the, you know, July and August could be the touchy months, and so far that wasn't. We've done okay. So I'll be able to tell you more after our finance meeting on Thursday, because that's going to be all the auditors in the region to see if there's any issues with any of them. So
good, thanks.
I have a great staff that just takes care of it for me. So
yeah, I think it's going fine.
Well, again, from your perspective, Shelley's is important. You're the ones who we collectively asked to do the work.
Rural Services Fund is at 45% of their expenditures. TIF Fund and Secondary Roads Fund. Secondary Roads Fund is only at 36% of their expenditures. Right now, I think that's going to kick up a little bit coming spring now that they've hired the people and we're getting into the winter. So, the next page is revenues. We have lots of departments that are over 50%, and I really like to see that. I mean, I try to focus really hard on revenues when we're talking budgets. Let's be more realistic on revenues. Let's try to not be afraid to budget revenues if we're going to bring them in. And this is why. I see the trend everywhere. We're bringing in revenues. It's a battle that I will fight as long as I'm in the budget world, but whatever. Overall, we're at 50% of the revenues. So, do you guys have any questions for me?
I don't. Do you have questions? No. Thanks again for making it very clear, very understandable.
I think my only question is, I'm trying to look at the line item across. Is that DHS at the percent of budget, the 388.42?
Are you on revenues or expenses?
I'm on revenue, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. DHS.
Yeah.
53.1% of the revenues.
Now, what's up above? That's the, I thought that was DHS.
Planning and development.
Oh, planning and development.
It just wasn't lining up. That's why.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I was trying to figure out why DHS was at that. So, thank you. Yeah. So, okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Anything else
thank you'd
like to tell us?
I'd like to tell you lots of things, but I'll.
Oh, go ahead. Thank you, Lisa. Okay.
Where are we now?
Looks like we're in upcoming agenda items. Does anybody have any upcoming items they'd like to comment on?
No.
Okay.
Just focused on the budget still.
Yes, we have. Okay. Public forum number two then. Comments from the public. Items not on this agenda. Board may not take action because the open meetings law may do so in the future. Any members of the public who want to make... Dustin, do you want to say anything?
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, then I will close public forum number two, and we will go over liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors.
So, the budget meetings, and we're working our way through. So, I think that's short, sweet.
Yeah. I have, we have the listening session tonight at 6 p.m. up in Carlsberg, I believe I have. I have going back and forth with KHOI. I believe it's at 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning with KHOI, and have Carla Webb joining me to talk about community services. They wanted specifically to talk a little bit more about mental health and disability services within the county. So we'll be on that early in the morning. Thursday, the 16th, I have aging resources meeting, so I'll be down in Des Moines for that and then back in the office after that particular meeting. I also have on my schedule, we have a department recognition for the Veterans Affairs and Community Services on Friday at 8:15. Is that correct?
Well, it's going to change that.
No, it's going to change that?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to ask.
It has gone off for calendars, I think.
Okay. So if I'm not there at that, then I do have a conference call for that Stepping Up Steering Committee at 8 a.m. So that's what I have on there. The other thing, I handed both of you the information already, but the child care resource and referral is going to be holding a kind of an orientation night on February 19th at the Ames Public Library at 7 p.m., and then also provide a variety of classes. It's a week long, and what they're really trying to do is to identify individuals who are interested in becoming child care providers, either in-home child care providers or working in a center, and having them go through and get all like their first aid and CPR training, any of the packets of information related to child care to really, they recognize that there's a need for child care within our county. Apparently, this has been piloted and done in a different county in southern Iowa, so this is a collaboration of Iowa Works, Early Childhood Iowa, Boost, CCRNR, and Ames Chamber to do this. So just encourage, if you know of anyone who is interested in becoming a child care provider, for them to attend this, at least the orientation night. They might decide, oh, this is something I don't really want to do, but if it is an area they would like to go into, it's really to help get them set up with all the materials that they would need, and then also get them set up for what they would need for their pre-inspection if they're going to open something within their home. So that's what I have on my agenda for the week, and along with all the budget workshops we have left this week.
Do we have more budget workshops? Goodness.
Yes, we do.
I'll be at the listening session from the Prairie Rail Trail this evening as well. Thursday, I'm going to try to attend the Surviving Street Construction meeting here in Nevada. Try to get some idea there about when they think things are going to happen so we can compare those to what's going to happen on Highway 30. So I'll bring information back from that. We have a StoryCom meeting Thursday at 4. Still pursuing our final tower site and have some options there that we're working on. And then, let's see... Monday, MLK celebration, 5:30 at the Ames Middle School. And I think that's pretty much it until next Tuesday. So, is there anything else that any of the supervisors wish to announce?
Good to go.
Okay, then I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We are adjourned. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Oh.